connecting the dots. The most amazing hour of radio on Breadbox Media at this hour. Which is a pretty specific category.
Quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. And I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. You can give us a call if you want. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also text us at that number, and you can tweet us at Breadbox Media. And we're here today with the fabulous, the incredible, the all-around raconteur, storyteller, writer, author, media presence, Rod Bennett. A media presence. Sounds kind of ghostly, doesn't it?
It does, so, yeah.
You're just sharing the ether with Edward R. Murrow. And,
pretty good.
I am the media. I am the ghost of media present. Hi. Hi, Rod.
Hello. Hello, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Hello to all of our listeners.
Yes, we're in the thick of summer. Yesterday was both my brothers' birthday. My brothers are not twins. They just, by dumb luck, happened to have been born on the same day, 3 years apart.
How about that?
And, so my oldest brother turned 70. So we had a big birthday party for him. And we made fun of him a lot because he's like now like two decades ahead of me. I'm still in my late 50s, and he's 7 years old now, so he's like super old, and I was making fun of him a lot. And I was also making fun of my other brother, but not quite as much because 67 is a kind of unremarkable year. It's a lot like 58, actually. I'm going to be turning 58. parents got when they found out they were expecting me, my brothers were like, they said, you know, going to have him midsummer. So my brothers are like rooting for me to be born July 19th too.
Have
a trifecta. You know? But I overshot the mark by a little over 2 weeks, and so
let everybody down.
Yeah, I let everybody down. You know, so I'm an August baby. There was an interesting four-day period in 1972 when my brother Rick, who's now just turned 70, was exactly twice as old as me. I was 13, and he turned 27.
Wait a second. Didn't Abbott Costello do a routine about this one time?
Sorry, no, really. He was twice as old as me, and my dad was twice as old as Rick for 4 days between August 1st and August 4th, 1972. Oh, so right. It was like a big thing. And then I turned 14 and screwed it all up. But, you know, that's how it goes. So I burn with shame, but there's nothing I can do about it for screwing up it was like the planets aligning. You just don't get that. This. People, you know, you find great significance in these things. It's speaking of which, the planets aligning next August, I think.
A big solar eclipse. Total solar eclipse. And it's going right over my house.
Is it really? It's going to go right over Oregon.
The track of totality goes almost literally right across my house. The number one, really? If you make a line on the ground to show the track of where the total center of the thing is, it goes right over my house.
You know, not only that, the track of totality could totally be a song by Yes, I think.
That's just a thought of mine. You're right. I'd listen to it.
The track of totality by Yes.
To it for sure.
Yes, I would listen to that song. Yeah, so we're thinking about perhaps going down to the Oregon coast next summer and camping down there just so we can see the total eclipse, and hoping and praying that it doesn't rain and be crappy like it often can be here in the Northwest, especially in August. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. And that will have tremendous significance, and people will wonder, you know, if these truly are the end times. And
I kind of wondered that. The apostles say it's the end times and has been since their day, so I guess there's not much to worry about, but wonder about.
That's true. We could be living in the end times for another 50,000 years for all we know. Because even 50,000 years in terms of the Earth's history is just like a blink.
Well, yeah. Let's hope the whole 50,000 isn't like this. 2016 has been
a crappy year so far.
A stinker.
Yeah, it's been bad. And I have this... Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me into something I've been hoping to bring up on the program. And
all right. Let's bring it up.
You know, when you get times like these with a lot of anxiety and trouble and people feeling like things are headed in the wrong direction, you know, it's easy to focus on external things. But with a little, I think the Christian faith encourages us to focus on the internal things first, not just because those are the things we can change, but those are the most powerful things to change. In other words, if we fix the church, we fix everything else. If you see what I'm saying. And since you and I are the church, fixing the church is we can act locally and think globally, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can fix this particular piece of the church, which is ourselves. But it occurred to me that maybe a big part of what's been going wrong is that we've allowed ourselves to be sidetracked by substitutes for the Christian faith. And I thought about explaining my idea to our listeners this way. It's funny, I've meditated on it a little bit, and it occurred to me the other day that in Christianity, the hard things are really the easy things. And what do I mean by that? Well, to clarify, I mean most of us have heard about the hard sayings of Jesus and hard passages in the Bible, difficult things to understand and stuff. But I think what really troubles most of us are the easy sayings of Jesus and of the Bible. In other words, the ones that are the easiest to understand are the most challenging. So we kind of leave them alone and focus on the hard stuff. In other words, a good portion of the New Testament is theology, but in the middle of you know, very sublime and deep theology, there's all kinds of nuggets of really, really easy stuff to understand. And the really, really easy stuff is easy to understand, but really hard to do, and really hard to grapple with. So we kind of tend to go looking for some theology to ponder over instead. And it occurred to me as I was thinking about this that the Pharisees really did the same thing. You know, the Pharisees are sort of the bad guys in the Gospels. But the reason why they're the bad guys is often misunderstood, I think. They get accused of being legalistic and of having too many rules, too many little minute pieces of casuistry and too much detailed liturgy and all the rest of it. But that really isn't what Jesus, if you read the passages, really rebukes them for.
Right.
There's a famous passage where he talks about how the Pharisees would very carefully tithe mint and dill and cumin. These are little spices that are made up of tiny little seeds, right. tiny particles. And they took tithing so literally that they went through and took out every tenth little dill seed and gave it as part of the tithe. But then he goes on to say, these things you ought to have done without neglecting the others.
Right.
In other words, he says, you've done all this tithing, but you've ignored the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. But something that's often neglected is the fact that he says, these things you ought to have done. That is the careful tithing. You ought to have done these things without neglecting the others. In other words, it's not their careful practices. It's the fact that they preferred the careful little practices to the really difficult stuff.
Yeah.
In other words, you make a show of difficultness with tithing and all of your impressive straining after a gnat and all the other stuff. But in reality, all of that stuff is a lot easier than living out justice and mercy and faith. So the Pharisees were the Orthodox party. In fact, as we just saw there, their religion gets God's full endorsement here. You know, another place Jesus said, the scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat, so you must practice and observe everything they tell you.
Yeah.
That's a pretty ringing endorsement from the second person of the Trinity.
Uh-huh.
But he says, don't do what they do. They preach, but they don't practice. And the trouble was, as we've been talking about here, is that they neglected the hard things, that is, the hard things to do, but easy to understand. And they focused on the easy things so that they could justify their neglect of the hard things, if you see what I'm driving at. So my thesis, I guess, that I'm stumbling around towards is that I think lately we Christians, like the Pharisees, have discovered a lot of substitutes for living like a Christian. We found a lot of Christian-ish things to do that are actually a lot easier than being a Christian.
And the funny thing is a lot of times they wind up being hard. We'll talk about this when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Rod Bennett, and we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Rod Bennett. We're talking a little bit about substitutes for Christianity. We do this. We come up with what we're really talking about, of course, is substitutes for God, aka idols. Make idols out of anything. You know, we can turn there's the big four big popular ones are money, pleasure, power, and honor. Those are hugely popular, and we return to those in various ways again and again. Power can come in weird forms, or our quest for power can come in weird forms. You know, it's not always, you know, Hitler addressing the throngs at Nuremberg or stuff. We can also seek power through, a lot of people do this. This is what, part of what the Pharisees did, is through little systems of order, where you get your world set up just so, and you figured out all the rules because you wrote half of them, and then you judge yourself by how well you keep the rules, which is awesome because you really do a great job of it if you're a certain kind of personality. And you judge everybody else by the way they fail to keep the rules.
Right.
And so
also, it's really interesting. Working out a really ornate system is really, really interesting.
Right. So
you can keep your mind occupied for a long time with this stuff and off of the weightier matters of the law that you're neglecting, as we were talking about earlier.
And part of the, you know, the challenge of it is sometimes, you know, sometimes people are perfectly right. They're doing their duty. They are, in fact, loving God by working out some system of order. That's what St. Thomas Aquinas spent his whole life doing, you know, was working out a system of order called Thomism. You know, somebody who's in charge of writing the laws on traffic codes in Seattle, that's his job, is keeping a system of order. And that's a good thing.
Well, we talked about earlier. Jesus puts his stamp of approval on their tithing of all of those tiny little seeds and stuff. He put his stamp of approval on. But something was wrong. And it was that they were majoring on the minor, if you see what I'm saying.
Right. Straining at gnats and swallowing camels is the image that Jesus uses. And we can do that. We can start turning our system. The moment we move from what might be a hobby or even working on a great and very important thing. So you think about the enormous attention to detail that Tolkien put into creating his secondary world. That was a little system of order, but it was never one that he made the mistake of prioritizing over the love of God and the love of man.
Right.
And so he understood that Middle Earth was made for man, not man for Middle Earth.
There we go. Yeah. The real center of what I hope to bring out here is the idea that that these things, many, almost all of them, are valid. In other words, they are. And when I said Christian-ish things, they are things that are undoubtedly, most of them, part of what it means to be a Christian, but not the center of what it means. And this was what Jesus meant about the weightier matters of the law. So maybe it would help if I went ahead and gave a list of the sort of easy things, the easy sayings of Jesus, sayings of the Bible that are really the hard ones, and maybe it'll illuminate what I'm driving at. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that are easier than being a Christian, if you're following my argument. Keep in mind, when I say easier than being a Christian, I don't mean that you're not sacramentally or positionally a Christian. I mean that they're not the center of Christianity. The being, the day-to-day being of a Christian looks different. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about. What does being a Christian look like according to these easy sayings of the Bible? What's the normal Christian life? I think Watchman Nee wrote a book called The Normal Christian Life. The Bible gives us the normal Christian life, and the sayings are all really easy to understand, but really, really difficult to grasp and grapple with. Let me give you just quickly a little apostolic sampler of some of the passages I'm talking about. And I won't bother to give all the references. These are all from the New Testament epistles. To start off with, Apostle Paul, let all that you do be done in love. And then again in 1 Corinthians, make love your aim and earnestly desire the spiritual gifts.
Yeah.
In Ephesians, lead a life worthy of your calling. Conduct yourselves with all lowliness and meekness, with patience, forbearing one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for edifying, as fits the occasion, that it may impart grace to those who hear. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, with all malice. Instead, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with all your heart, always and for everything giving thanks. Do nothing from selfishness or conceit, but in humility count others better than yourself. Put all these away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, foul talk from your mouth. Put on instead compassion, kindness, lowliness, meekness, patience, forbearing with one another. Aspire to live quietly, to mind your own business, to work with your hands. Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances. This is the will of Christ for you. I desire that in every place men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Keep your life free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never fail or forsake you. Be submissive to rulers and authorities. Be obedient. Be ready for any honest work, to speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling. Be gentle. Show perfect courtesy toward all men. Strive for peace with all men. Let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not work the righteousness of God. With the tongue we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brethren, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening, fresh water and brackish? put away all malice and all guile and insincerity and evil and all slander. Have unity of spirit, sympathy, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Above all, hold unfailing your love for one another, since love covers a multitude of sins. Love one another, for love is of God, and he who loves is born of God and knows God. And this we have a commandment from him, that he who loves God should love his brother also. We could add more. Now, The really appalling thing about all of that stuff is how perfectly obviously understandable it is. There's no difficult theology in any of that. Right. You don't have to argue or quarrel about any of it. There's nothing to figure out. It's all on the surface.
Right.
These are the easy sayings of the Bible, and they're the hardest. These are the things that we want to substitute for. You know, if you follow what I'm driving at, it's We need something easier than being a Christian. If you see what I'm driving.
Yeah,
at.
Sure. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So I thought, well, what are some of the examples of easier than being a Christian that I've been can come up with off the top of my head? Well, one that maybe you and I are prone to is studying and talking about theology. Easier than being a Christian.
Yeah.
And we have St. Paul's word on that, too. If I understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
It was something that had never occurred to me until Pope Francis pointed it out in Laudato Si, of all things. He makes the point that part of the discussion that's going on is the danger of nature worship, which is to say another form of idolatry. Because really all idolatry is nature worship. What you're doing is you're picking something out of nature, some creature, instead of God. You've only got your choice of two things to worship, God or something that God made. That's all there is.
That's it. That narrows it down, too.
It really narrows it down. And so anyway, he makes the point, interestingly, that part of the sin of idolatry, part of the reason that idolatry is a sin, is not merely what it does to you, it's what it does to the idol. That idols can't bear the weight that we place upon them.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Rod Bennett. We'll be back in just a second.
Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media.
To Connecting the Dots, I'm your host, Mark Shea, Dowager Countess, and we're here today with Rod Bennett. We were talking before the break. There was something that Pope Francis pointed out in Laudato Si that I thought was really just had never seen it before, and once he pointed it out, it was like, whoa. He said that part of the sin of idolatry is not merely Secondly, that we are not worshiping God as he ought to be worshiped, and are instead attempting to give divine honors to creatures. But he said the other aspect of the sin of idolatry is that the idol cannot bear the weight of adoration that we place upon it.
Yeah, it's a misuse of the thing that you're idolizing.
And so it, and this is particularly true, of course, you can see this when it's a person who's the idol. So, you know, think about how many superstars have we seen just flame out completely because they were completely surrounded by adulators. And things were asked of them that they could not possibly supply. Because when you commit idolatry, what you're doing is you're asking that person to fill the shoes of God Almighty. Hmm. Well, that's hard to do because, you know, we're just puny us. And so, you know, how many times have we seen, you know, these poor people who become, adored? And it destroys a human being. It can seriously destroy a human being, unless the human being is someone who has learned sanctity from Jesus, and who is able to say, not to us, O Lord, but to thy name give glory. Because, of course, the great danger, especially with a human idol, is that he or she is going to really try to live up to this. Hmm. You know, I mean, what did Hitler attempt to do other than become, you know, the God that his German nation acclaimed him as? He took all this really seriously for himself. And you know, and other times you'll see people who are aware that they can't fill those shoes, so they don't proudly take such a mantle to themselves, but they still can't bear the load. And so they flame out, they do drugs, they kill themselves.
It's an interesting perspective, definitely. Have some pity on the idol.
Have pity on the idol.
Yeah.
It can't do this thing that you're asking it to do. You know?
Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but back to you and the thing that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about things that we try to do because they're easier than being a Christian. All the passages that I gave are things that, like the tithing of the little dill seeds, are much harder. This is the justice and the mercy and the faith.
Yeah.
And the tithing of the dill seeds are things like talking and studying theology. Not that you know, these things you ought, as Jesus said, these things you ought to have done, not to have left the others undone.
Yeah.
So talking and studying theology is one of the things you can do that's easier than all of that stuff we quoted. Another example is easier than being a Christian is partaking regularly of Christian-themed entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can get under the delusion that because you listen to a lot of Christian speeches and Christian recording artists and things like that, that can become your
right
thing that you neglect the weightier matters for.
Right. And another, you know, one of the things that can get become part of that category for a certain kind of personality is the liturgy itself. Mm-hmm. You can start the purpose of the liturgy there. C.S. Lewis uses the image of a sunbeam. He says there are two ways of seeing a sunbeam. You can look at a sunbeam. So you walk into a shed and there's a sunbeam coming through the window and you can see all the things that are illuminated by the sunbeam, the little dust motes and bugs and stuff like that floating around. But there's another way of seeing a sunbeam, which is to look along the sunbeam back at the sun. And the liturgy is something that is supposed to be looked along. The goal of liturgy is to get us to God, just as the purpose of a good pair of shoes is to get us somewhere. And if you're constantly aware of your shoes, If you're focused on your shoes all the time while you're walking, that means the shoes are bad. Yeah. Really good shoes are shoes you never think about. Liturgy is something ultimately that's supposed to direct us to God. And if for one of there can be different reasons that liturgy itself becomes an object. So it can be because the liturgy is super irritating because whoever is celebrating it forgets that the command to Peter was feed my sheep, not try experiments on my rats. Right. And so, you know, I think we've all, you know, been through liturgies where whoever is doing this thing really thinks that the goal is to try experiments on the rats, you know. And so that could be irritating. But there can also be another way in which we approach liturgy wrongly, and that is to reduce the liturgy to an aesthetic experience. And so it's not perfect enough. The host wasn't elevated high enough, or I didn't like the singing or whatever and ever. And we can become so obsessed with the details of the liturgy itself that we're not thinking about God. We're too busy critiquing.
Another of the things that's can be easier than being a Christian is, starring on the Christian equivalent of the Siskel and Ebert show. In other words, we're critics. We're here to let everybody know, Siskel and Ebert did with the movies, exactly where the various Christian leaders or liturgists or whatever have gone wrong. Yeah. So our job is to sit here and give the thumbs up or the thumbs down. Mm-hmm. And that might be a really fun job. You know, it probably was fun to watch all six movies a week the way they did in the and then give thumbs up or thumbs down at the end of the week. But it can be a substitute for being a Christian if you're sitting on the sidelines and like the critics, like Statler and Waldorf. And I'm afraid that's a pretty common temptation is to leave church talking like Statler and Waldorf after the Muppet Show's over.
I remember one of my favorite priests in the world said, the great thing about the Coffee and Donuts Hour is that's where the people of God can get together and rebut the homily.
That's right.
And, I got to say, there have been times, although my beloved Dominicans give such good homilies, it's very rarely now. But there have been times, you know, in the past where you kind of got together and you go, what was that? You know.
Now, here's two more equal and opposite things that are easier than being a Christian. Mm-hmm. One of them is it's easier than voting to improve other people's morals is easier than being a Christian.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, political activism to address the fact that America is not acting very much like a Christian nation anymore. So that's easier than being a Christian. You can vanish pretty far up the rabbit hole of political activism masquerading as Christianity or substituting for Christianity.
Right.
But the flip side is
certainly a temptation of mine.
The flip side of this.
You probably knew that.
Yes. The flip side of this is, and this is a little bit subtle because in the Gospels, Jesus makes good works almost the center of being a Christian. But sometimes, if you'll follow me carefully, actual good works can be easier than the love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and faithfulness that we talked about before up above.
Right. Yeah.
1 Corinthians says it very well. Apostle Paul says, if I give away all that I have, even if I deliver my body to be burned, but I have not love, I gain nothing.
Right.
So the political equivalent here is the mirror image of voting to improve other people's morals is voting for somebody who promises to feed the poor instead of you.
Right.
Yes.
This is actually, I'm writing about this right now. I'm doing a piece on Mary and Martha. And one of the shocking things that Jesus says, which has always given me pause, is in Matthew's gospel, in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say?" And then he follows it up with, you know, on that day, many will come to me saying, Lord, didn't I, you know, do, and he lists off all these things that are like, I thought we were supposed to be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, I never knew you. And it's like, well, wait, what? You know, are you
right.
saying, yeah, shouldn't this, be doing that stuff?
You yeah, know? This is a very challenging passage.
It is.
In evangelicalism, well, the whole verse, you have to quote the whole verse. In evangelicalism, he says, depart from me, I never knew you. And they I end it there. I
never knew you. Yeah.
They end it there.
Uh-huh.
But the verse has a second half.
Okay.
The second half is, depart from me, I never knew you. I've got it here in front of me. Oh, okay. Well, that gives me a minute to look it up.
We're up against the break, so yeah. Saved by the bell. All right, well, you're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett. We're talking about doing the will of God and substitutes for that. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Rod Bennett. We've been talking about substitutes for being a Christian, and we're specifically talking, lest you misunderstand, we're not talking about other religions or, you know, any of that sort of thing, or cults or this kind of thing. We're just talking about, how should you put it? Christian strategies for avoiding Jesus.
That's a pretty good way of putting it.
So, you know, one of my favorite ones is the I'm telling you this so you can pray strategy. Have you heard about Rod Bennett?
Gosh, I hope not.
I have heard the most awful things about him, and I'm telling you this so that you can pray. Beloved strategy, right? I can be pious and gossip at the same time.
Right.
And
well, the passage that you brought up right before the break, which we have since found, gang.
We have. It's in Matthew 7.
We can quote it properly rather than fumbling around with it. Jesus told his disciples, he's talking about discipleship here. He says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. A very traditional explanation of this passage. When I was an evangelical, we often stopped at, I never knew you. In other words, we use this verse against Catholics many times because we said here, these are people who, you know, undoubtedly people like Mother Teresa have done great works and seemed like Christians and done an awful lot of saying of Lord and Lord, you know, but God's going to tell them one day, I never knew you. And I guess we thought that it was because he didn't know them because they didn't pray right, didn't pray in evangelicalese, I guess, but the emphasis is on the end here, away from me, you evildoers. I think this connects the passage very clearly to what we talked about earlier when Jesus said about the Pharisees that they were very careful about the liturgical and ritual observances, but they ignored the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. Once again, we're talking about substitutes. If these people that Christ is talking to are evildoers, that there are people who are continuing to practice various grave sins. So they get told to depart because they're evildoers, not because they prophesied and all the other things, and not really because they didn't have some mystical interior knowledge of God? The answer is, the reason he didn't know them is because they were evildoers. They focused on external things and ignored the weightier matters, mm-hmm. which is what we're getting at. Substitutes for actually allowing God to change your life. Being right. a Christian in the way we heard described, full of love and compassion and forgiveness, and not have slander on our lips and anger and bitterness and all these other things characterized. I posted a little link to an article on my Facebook recently, and the title of the article, I guess I was being a bit of a mixer, I suppose, here, but the title of the little article was, "Why are so many Christians so angry and why are Christians so angry and unhappy?"
Mm-hmm.
So this that was the title of the article. Why are Christians so angry and unhappy? And I normally get lots of responses to articles like this, and mm-hmm. got no likes at all for "Why are Christians so angry and unhappy?"
You suck. Your article made me angry and unhappy.
But I didn't get denial. So, in other words, I didn't get people who said, "Oh no, I'm full of joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness." No, they just, I guess it hit a little too close to the mark.
Well, it's been a tough year. 2016. I saw a cartoon yesterday. Somebody saying, could it actually be that David Bowie was holding together the fabric of the universe?
Pretty good.
You know, the guy dies and everything just goes to hell. What's going on?
But yeah, I mean, I think the you couldn't have a more black and white contrast. In other words, those passages, those commands, apostolic commands that we quoted at length earlier about what a Christian's life is supposed to look like. Overflowing with forgiveness and meekness and gentleness and all of that, and full of spiritual songs and lifted hands and the singing of hymns and all the rest of it. Most people today, you mention Christians and they think of somebody who's angry and unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that something went wrong somewhere. That's what set me to wondering about the things we use as the substitutes for Christianity, the easy passages that are actually really hard.
Yeah. Well, and it's a real temptation, and it's especially a temptation. You know, I'm not one of these people that has a lot of patience with American Christians whining about how hard their lives are. Because, you know, not half a world away, there are people who are being beheaded for their faith, and they have real problems, you know, and we just don't. But one thing that I do think is true was an observation that Mother Teresa made about the American, about American civilization in general, but it extends to the church as well. She regarded us as immensely impoverished. We've got all this stuff, but we don't. What we lack so desperately are the graces that are given to the poor. We lack poverty, and because of that, we have a ton of substitutes for living the Christian life, and we all do this. You know, there's a clarity that comes to people in the desert. This is the constant testimony of Scripture. Where does God take Israel? He takes Israel out into the desert. And out in the desert, they have this formative encounter with Christ. Where does Jesus go when he begins his ministry? He heads into the desert. Where does Paul go when he has his encounter with Christ? He goes into the desert. And so, the good news of the struggles that the church is facing right now here in this country is I think that we're headed into the desert, and that's not a bad place. It's a place that we're afraid of, but it's not a place ultimately where God abandons us. It's the place where we encounter God. So all of that is meant to be a hopeful thing. What are our worldly fortunes looking like? Well, worse and worse. But we can stand that.
One of the things that we've got to do is renounce the substitutes. In other words, if you find that you're not much like the person described in the passages we quoted, then maybe you're quenching the spirit. In one of those passages, we're told, quench not the spirit. In other words, let God do these things in you. And if it's not happening in you, I mean, you receive the spirit in baptism, and there's greater fullness available for the asking. So if we don't find, if our lives don't seem to us very much like the what we heard described, the it's not the end, you know. In other words, desire, seek after the those things that we talked about. Because if God gives those kinds of commands, He also gives the graces to obey. He never gives commands that are impossible to obey.
Right.
Might be humanly impossible, but He gives you the access to supernatural graces.
Gives you the grace to do it,
the whole darn point.
Yeah.
Christianity has no point if it's not about opening the door to supernatural graces you didn't have access to before. So, but hanging on and doubling down on the old substitutes is the fleshly temptation. That's what we've been doing, I think. And that's what we got to stop doing.
Well, and one of the things, of course, that the Christian tradition teaches us, Catholic tradition teaches us, is that the punishment that goes with sin, we often tend to think of it as this thing that God does to you, that the punishments are like external, like postage stamps stuck on you. In reality, of course, sin is its own punishment. That's and that's why God hates sin, is because He doesn't want us to suffer. But God has ordained that when suffering does come, under grace, we can profit by it. So it's not just vengeance. All of which is to say, part of the reason that we're headed toward the desert is our own sins. The choices that we have made cumulatively piled up over decades and generations. The chickens are coming home to roost.
Well,
but
that's
that
it.
Doesn't mean that God will abandon us.
It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to blame Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump than it is to say we as the church are not what we're supposed to be yet.
Right. And it really is about us as the church.
It's our
fault.
It's
the church that's at the center. It's not American politics that's at the center. It's the church. And that's what all of history is about, is God bringing the church to glory. So he hasn't given up on that project. He put a lot of effort into it. He's kind of backed down now. So you're listening to, and you've been listening to, Connecting the Dots. My guest today was Rod Bennett. Our producer was Ethan Boland. I was your host, Mark Shea. And we will be back again tomorrow with Christine Franklin. Till then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
So long, everybody.